The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Global health leaders will gather in Geneva today at the annual World Health Assembly, with the main focus being the Pandemic Accord. This new agreement will facilitate countries working together in order to prepare and prevent any future pandemics. Joining us now to talk about the proposed accord is Dr. Mike Ryan, Executive Director of the World Health Organization. Mike, good morning.
Good morning, Pat.
Now, there have been discussions ongoing all of last week in preparation for this accord. How close to finality is it?
Close, but we're not there yet. I mean, we've been doing this for the last 2 years, in fact, both negotiating changes to the international health regulations, and the member states have been negotiating a new accord in preparation for any future pandemics. So it's been a 2-year process. Nearly there. It's like extra time in a game. We need to take a breath and try and push on and get this done.
Now, what are the elements of the accord? How would the world collectively prepare for the next pandemic? Because for sure there will be one.
Well, it's based on, I suppose, three principles. One is we need to do better at preventing the next pandemic or reducing the risk of it. We need to do better at protecting people once it has emerged, especially through the equitable distribution of vaccines and drugs to those who most need them. We need to be able to finance that in a way that's sustainable. So we need a new global rules that will allow us to prepare better, respond better, and recover more quickly.
Now, we reckon in Ireland we did rather well in terms of our mortality. But globally, it's said that 7 million people died directly from the pandemic, and perhaps more again from the after effects or from the illnesses that were not treated as a result of resources being diverted.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, the true death toll may never be known, but certainly there are many millions of direct deaths, but also the ongoing situation we face on two fronts. One is people who experience long COVID symptoms, but also the fact that health systems are struggling to recover, and especially when we see the fiscal contractions. Many ministries of finance are coming looking for the resources that they put into health during COVID, and there's a huge contraction in the health space, and we're seeing that through immunization rates dropping, maternal mortality rates rising in many countries as they struggle for the health system to recover.
I mean, it could be said that poverty is a pandemic.
Absolutely, and there are many such pandemics, but you know, we've seen with nature as a way of evolving viruses and bacteria that can affect the whole of humanity in a very short space of weeks. It's not the thing that should be on people's minds moment to moment. There are many other things that people are worried about. They're worried about their work. They're worried about their income. They're worried about their kids' education. And around the world, many people are displaced and hungry. There are many things to concern people. This is one of the risks to our civilization that we can manage. We have technology, we have science, we have cooperation, we have the means to do it. We need to agree the rules by which we will do that. This is one risk that can be managed.
Now, there are certain things that might be easier to do than others. Things like boosting the information that is available to ordinary populations about pandemics, about infections, and about vaccinations and how infections might be treated.
No, very, very much so. And there's a balance here, Pat, to be struck. People don't need to have black shrouds waved in front of them and have their life scared out of them, telling them we're all going to die in a pandemic or an epidemic. These are things of nature. They've been around for centuries. Plague, smallpox, polio, many, many things. We've won the battle against smallpox. We eradicated it from the face of the earth. We're about, I hope, to do the same with polio. We've had huge successes. So people don't need to worry about this moment to moment. But they do need information on it. And they certainly don't need the levels of misinformation and disinformation that they've said about vaccines and really about the efforts that people are making to try and improve the way we cooperate. Sovereign nations cooperate with each other to find better solutions for all our peoples. That is the nature of how we work together at international level. And it's really been very sad for me to witness the amount of disinformation that's been pushed around the place on this matter. I've always said it with vaccines and other things. Hesitancy is not a problem. Asking deep questions about what you put in your body or what a government put in place as regards policy. It's very important. It's very important that we question. But it's important that we question the facts and we bring facts to the table and not have this post-truth world where disinformation is driving the dialogue at community level and scaring the lives out of people.
Now, science responded very quickly and produced these new mRNA vaccines, which turned out to be really, really effective. But there were questions even at the time as they were being manufactured in bulk as to the fairness of distribution globally to countries maybe that didn't have the resources that we had in Ireland. How would that be addressed under the pandemic accord?
Well, it was quite difficult for countries who were either making vaccine or purchasing vaccine to purchase vaccine and then immediately share that with another country. But there is a principle that people have that for first, government needs to protect its own citizens. That's a very important concept. That is the primary role of government. And it is tough politically then to be seen to give away something that's life-saving. But what we saw in the pandemic was many, many people, particularly in the global south, not having access to vaccines. And they were older persons, people with underlying conditions, the very same people who were dying in the north and getting then protected by vaccines. They were not getting protected. And we were given second, third, and fourth doses of vaccine to people in the north who, yes, they derived the benefit from it, but the benefit they derived was nothing like the benefit that would have been derived by someone with an underlying condition or someone in an older age group. This is not about taking vaccine away from countries. This is about creating a set-aside, creating a joint stockpile between all nations that so that 10 to 20% of the vaccines produced in the pandemic will be set aside virtually and redistributed according to the need. And that will be to Ireland or to Botswana. It depends on where the virus is having its impact. And we don't know what the next virus will be. We don't know who it will impact. And we certainly don't know who will produce the vaccine. We were very lucky in many ways in the last pandemic because nearly all of the vaccines worked. That is not the, the normal course of events. In most work in vaccinology, the majority of vaccines don't work. And we don't know who or where the life-saving vaccine will come from in the next pandemic. And it's really important for all nations collectively to agree that a small proportion of that global production will be put aside to be redistributed according to need to those people who will most benefit around the world.
Now, are big pharma involved in the negotiations for the pandemic accord? Because, the request...
They have been directly negotiating that. The member states are the ones negotiating. We as WHO, the Secretariat, we're only supporting the process. But industry have been involved. There have been numerous meetings. The Bureau and the negotiators have met with industry. The Global Preparedness Monitoring Board has met with industry. We've met with developing country manufacturers, with the IFPMA, with CEOs of major companies. And I would have to say that, and while there may be lots of negativity out there about big pharma sometimes, in this particular occasion, I think we see that pharmaceutical companies and the pharmaceutical industry would like to have an agreement because it would provide the kind of legal certainty, predictability. It would allow them to essentially include in their production cycles the vaccine that will be set aside. It provides a much more transparent level playing field and allows them to become a partner in a global mechanism rather than continually being seen as a negative force in this area.
Would they ever be required to share their science, if you like, so that in the same way as Clinton's negotiation allowed the production of anti-HIV drugs very cheaply in Africa or for Africa, that the same could be done for a future pandemic?
Well, they're doing it already, and WHO is facilitating that. We have a tremendous amount of vaccine technology transfer going on as we speak. I mean, it happened right during the pandemic, and with thanks to AstraZeneca in the UK and the support of the Oxford Vaccine Institute, we saw the technology for that vaccine been transferred to India, to SII in India, and some of the largest production of that vaccine came out of India. So we saw it during the pandemic. We need more of it. And there are many, many different platforms now being created to look at vaccine scale-up, vaccine research, technology transfer, and that's all included in the agreement. And this pandemic agreement includes elements on prevention, on One Health approaches, on research and development, on a global health emergency workforce, on managing global supply chains, on technology transfer, and on access and benefit sharing in the system. Yeah. And it will be a huge step forward if we can re-engage everyone here at the Assembly and get down the finishing straight, and our member states can get this agreement over the line.
Now, Mike, you mentioned misinformation, and there was a story going around which was mentioned by a leak from Global Justice Now, said that rich countries were refusing to learn the lessons of the global pandemic. And then there was another story going around that the WHO in this accord would have the power to order lockdowns. In other words, supersede governments.
Yeah, it's rather ironic, Pat, because if you cast your mind back to the pandemic, about the only organization that wasn't advising lockdowns in any circumstances was WHO. We always spoke about calibrated measures. We did not support the idea of stringent lockdowns that were not, especially in situations where people's livelihoods and ability to survive in the South, for example, was entirely dependent on people's ability to go to work and make that couple of dollars a day. So in terms of the agreement itself, I think it's in the agreement 7 or 8 times it's explicitly stated that this is an agreement between member states, and in no way will supersede or undermine national law, national sovereignty, or domestic law. Remind you, Pat, as Noel White, the ambassador here for Ireland and Geneva, has said to me that Ireland agreed 1 year after our independence to join the League of Nations. Why would a small country, after 800 years looking for its independence and self-determination, join another club? And his point is that the truest expression of confidence, nationality, is to reach out to other nations to find solutions together.
Well, let's hope the pandemic accord gets negotiated to a point of satisfaction for everybody and is ratified by the Assembly. Mike, thank you very much for joining us on the line once again. Dr. Mike Ryan, Executive Director of the World Health Organization.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.